decade. He currently holds what he describes as the most important position in the program, a sober member. And now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, Visalia's own Mike Kay.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike, alcoholic. That's what I told Mark. Like everybody else in here, I'm as high as you can get in Alcoholics Anonymous, sober member today. And that's it. You know, by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is embodied in the steps and tradition, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or use any illegal substances since the second day of January 1986, and for that I'm truly grateful. I had my birthday this year, and I went, oh my God, that long? And you know what? It's one day at a time. It's always one day at a time. You know, I've had this pitch going on in my head all afternoon, and I've said everything I can, so I guess I can probably just sit down now. Oh, no, you guys didn't hear it. Never mind. One of the things that I got going on up here is this, and that is in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, selfishness, self-centeredness, this we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-centeredness, and self-pity, we step on the toes of others and they retaliate. There's my drinking career. You know, that's my whole drinking career. That's it. That's what I did. That's what I was. That's who I was. I was not the most beautiful drunk in the world, but not the worst either. Sometimes that little guy up in here says, oh, you weren't all that bad. You weren't all that bad. Come on, you know, I mean, you still had a house and you were still married. Blah, 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 blah. And I say, thank you for sharing. Now go sit down. And then I go on and remember what I was really like. You know, what I was really like. You know, probably not too many of you remember it, but years ago when I first got sober, the old guys in AA used to talk about a form of therapy that they used to have them do, you know, not in what they do in recovery homes now. It's called the aversion therapy. That's where you go to these places, and a bunch of these old guys at the men's meeting used to talk about that. And they go to the Raleigh Hills or these places, and they just stuff you with alcohol and stuff you with alcohol. You get sick, and you get sick, and you wouldn't want to drink anymore. And all those guys, every one of those guys said, you know, that didn't work for them. What worked for them is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and but what I wanted to share was when I was about 14 years old, I accidentally did aversion therapy on myself. I always wanted to drink a bunch of the whiskey like my dad did. And so I used to take a little bit of his Old Crow, and I'd take a little bit and put it in the jar that I had, and I'd take a little bit every now and then so I wouldn't get caught. And finally I had that jar filled, and me and a neighbor kid drank that jar when my parents were gone one night. Gosh, we had fun for a while, and then we got so sick and everything, and I didn't realize till years later that was a quart mason jar that we drank, the two of us. So I didn't drink much during high school hard liquor. I drank a little bit of beer and stuff like that, but man, that did it for me. I mean, it works when you're 14 years old. I know it didn't work for the old guys, but it worked for me when I was 14. I fit in with other things other than drinking when I was in high school. I was one of those people that did all those other things. It was the 60s. I guess it was kind of supposed to be expected, but that's what I did. And I did a lot of things to fit in, then I did a lot of things because I needed to. And I was such a good kid that my parents gave me a one-way ticket to Hawaii when I graduated from high school. That was it. You know, and I used to talk to my mom about that years later. Hey, you gave me a one-way ticket. You know, come on, I know. Oh, no, we just didn't want you to spend the money. We didn't want you to cash the ticket in. Well, I would have. You know, and the whole thing about it is I got there and I wanted to stay there, so I did what was necessary to stay there. I got a job. I worked for a carnival. And I did that for 3 years, but at the very beginning, I was taught what to do. I learned how to fit in with drinking. We got done with the state fair and went over to the Big Island, and my boss told me, we're going to go down this bar tonight. This is 18 years old, by the way. Remember this, you know, from Visalia. And he said, we're going to go down to this bar, and you're going to buy the Ride Boys a couple rounds of Primo, which is a Hawaiian piss water beer. And they're going to like you. They're going to be your friends. And I did. These guys, these Ride Boys, were like big, great big guys. The smallest one was 6'2" and weighed 250 pounds, and he was a year younger than me. And they called him Frog. Anyway, I mean, that's what I did. I learned how to fit in with alcohol, you know, buying stuff for people and stuff like that. And I did that. And I was successful with that. You know, I didn't have too many bouts for those years when it was uncontrollable for those 3 years. And then came back, California. And took a trip around the country and stuff, and ended up back in Visalia. And that's when it started. That's when the drinking started, the uncontrollable drinking started. I got a job. I remember I had myself convinced I was an insomniac. I worked nights. I worked at night. Had to sleep during the day. I couldn't sleep during the day, so I had to drink. And I remember sitting on the side of my bed one morning. I was 21 years old with a big old jug of vodka, and I was drinking it straight to help put me to sleep. So I thought that's what I was doing, to put me to sleep. And I thought, what's not right with this picture? And then I let that thought go real quick. Keep drinking. And that's what I did. I did that, and I kept doing that over the years. And it worked for a while, and then it didn't work for a while. And then I had this job. This is what it was like at the end of my drinking. This is what I was like at the end of my drinking. I worked at a place. I was a printer, and I worked shift work. And I worked the best drinking shift that anybody can work. It was 3 to 11, 3 in the afternoon till 11 o'clock at night. Okay, get off work, and I could go, you know, with the guys and go out playing cards or shooting craps or, you know, whatever, you know, just some good old boys making noise. And that worked for a while. It really worked because you could party all night and get to bed before the wife, second wife, got up. You know, wouldn't get in trouble usually, but... It worked, because I could sleep in and didn't have to do anything. I'd get up and kind of get sick a little bit and go to work the next day and do the same thing over and over and over. Weekends were kind of bad because I had to be around the family. You know, I had to be around the family, and that wasn't always that comfortable because I couldn't do what I needed to do. You know, this is in the early mid 80s. And, what happened was the last couple, 3 years of my drinking, I couldn't do that anymore. I couldn't do that. I couldn't go after work with the guys and go party, you know, just having fun, shooting craps or anything. I couldn't do that anymore because I would have to share. You know, I would have to share my alcohol with them. You know, I only had enough for me. I could only afford enough for me. That's what went on up here. The thing is, it was partially true. You know, I love drinking whiskey. I love drinking Jack Daniels when I can afford it, but most of the time I drank Cream of Kentucky. You know, ooh, good stuff. Ooh, yummy. But you know what? Just like Dr. Silkworth said in the book, he says, men and women drink alcohol for the effect. You know, and that's why I drank alcohol. It didn't have anything to do with the taste. The taste didn't matter to me. You know, after a couple, it didn't matter. I just needed to get where I needed to get every night. You know, I'm that way with coffee today. You know, I don't like the taste of coffee, but I drink a cup in the morning, drink a cup in the afternoon, so it'll wake me up. You know, for the effect produced by the coffee. And that's just the way I am. But the thing is I isolated. And I isolated and found myself not liking a lot of people. Not liking mostly everybody. Lack of power, that was my dilemma. You know, nobody was doing that. I didn't realize this till after I got sober and had worked my steps, but, you know, lack of power. People just weren't doing what I was doing. I'd look down that row of those guys running those printing presses and those dirty SOBs. Why aren't they doing stuff my way? They didn't need to do stuff my way. I didn't realize that at the time. And I'd drink at them, and I'd go home every night. And the last 6 months of my drinking, this is what I was like. I lived down by Jefferson Park down there, a little south of Jefferson Park, and I had it in my mind that everybody north of me was just a bunch of dirty, low-down scum that needed to just be wiped off the face of the earth. Every night I'd be sitting watching TV. Everybody'd be asleep in the house, you know, and just be me drinking. And that's what I thought, and this is what I did. This is like July and August, the year before, the few months before I got sober. I, you know, it's summer, it's warm, right? So you have the front door open midnight. And you have the screen door on there, and, you know, you have the front door open a little bit. I figured those people would try and break into my house. I wanted people to break into my house because, you see, I had a gun. I had a, for lack of a better term, it was a machine gun. It was an assault rifle. And I had a 30-round clip in it. And I had it sitting next to me when I was drinking. And every night I was hoping and hoping that somebody would break into my house so I could shoot them. That's what I had become in the end of my drinking. Now, the last couple of months I didn't do that because we moved to a different house and I couldn't do that anymore, but that is what I was like. That is exactly what I was like. You know, they talk about what it's like, what happened, and what it's like today. That's what I was like. I had become that kind of person. I was so full of hate. I was so full of fear. And I didn't know why. I didn't know why. And what happened was, New Year's Eve, 1985, I had a party at my house. And the reason I had a party at my house was because nobody would invite me to parties anymore. I didn't know why. You know, I hated everybody and snarled at everybody and my hair was this big and my mustache was this big. And so I had to have a party at my house because nobody invited me to parties. So I had a party at my house. Okay? And when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard in chapter 3 what we read, drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, those things. I tried that on my last drunk. I only bought one case of beer, no hard liquor. I was going to limit the number of drinks and only drink beer. Well, somebody brought over a bottle of whiskey, and somebody brought over another bottle of whiskey, and then a bottle of tequila, and that was it. I ended up over at myself and a few other people ended up over at somebody else's house. They had a hot tub and stuff. And the next day, I woke up and it didn't feel too good. I'd been partying pretty good. And I had to go over to those people's house to get my pants because I'd gone home with somebody else's pants. Oh, we were having fun. I was, you know, the thing is I was a blackout drinker, okay? I was a blackout drinker, and people, my drinking buddies would laugh with me, and, oh, what you, what you did, that was so funny, Well, that day I went over to the house, and they just kind of sat and went, no, man, you don't know, you don't want to know. You don't want to know. And, you know, when they talk in chapter 3 about that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, when I first heard that, I knew exactly what that meant, because that's the way I felt. You know, that's the way I felt. My drinking buddies weren't laughing with me anymore. They were, no, man, you don't want to know. You know, and a lot of it to this day, I still don't know. I've learned over the years. I just learned about 4 years ago that I actually drove home. I thought I was in the passenger seat and somebody else drove me home. You know, more will be revealed. And what happened was, my wife at the time, my second ex-wife, She said to me something very profound. She said, I give my right arm if you quit getting drunk like that. Not if you quit drinking. You quit getting drunk like that. And she had written down the phone number of the Tulare County Central Office, which was new. They just started up in November of 85, and they were new. And so I devised a very, very sneaky plan. I figured that, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to call these people. I'm going to go to that ANA, because I'd met a couple people in AA before. My first father-in-law, goofy sucker, he had so much fun laughing and stuff, playing cards, and he didn't have to drink. I knew he was goofy. There was something wrong with him. You know, and I met one other person in AA that was also goofy, because they were having a good time and they weren't drinking. I knew something was wrong with them. You know, there had to be something wrong with somebody that wasn't drinking and was having a good time. Okay, so I figured I'd go hang out with those goofy people, with all those old winos and goofy people and stuff for 90 days, and I would learn what I was doing wrong. Now, I didn't want to do like it says in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to drink like a gentleman so people would take their hats off to me. What I wanted to do was I still wanted to be able to drink like a pig, which is what I did, and I wanted to learn how to act like a gentleman. I figured I was going to go to AA for 90 days, listen to all these fools, and go, I don't need to do that. I won't do that. I won't do that. That was a little over 25 years ago. I still haven't figured it out yet. Nobody shared that with me, how I can still drink like a pig and act like a gentleman. And I am so grateful for that. I am so, so grateful for that, because my life has changed so much. And here's what happened. This lady at Central Office, her name was Dottie. She was so funny. She was goofy. It was Wednesday. She thought it was Thursday. You know, she said, you want to go to a meeting? We'll send somebody to come get you. I said, okay. And she sent this guy, who I consider still to this day the best 12-stepper that I've ever met. This guy calls me up, and he says, asked me where I lived, and I told him, he said, I'll meet you at the store down by your house. I thought, okay, you're not even going to come by and get me. I didn't realize, you know, when we're 12-stepping somebody, you go with two people, not one. He was so serious about this. He didn't have anybody come with him, so he said he'd meet me at the store down by my house. He said, I'll meet you. I got my black sports car down there. You know, I'll be outside by my black sports car. I said, okay. He said, his name is Ken. So I walked down the three or four blocks to the store down by my house, and this old guy comes walking out, and his head was shaved. And remember, this was 1986, so that wasn't in vogue like it is today. All right? And he had this trench coat on, and he was pretty tall. He was about 6'2", and he was stooped over. And he walked up and was waiting by his car, his black sports car, which was a Plymouth Champ. Okay? Yeah, that was his black sports car, and I went, uh-oh. Okay, what have I got myself into? And so I went, I met the guy, and he was okay, and he goes, and he's riding with me. He's driving me. He goes, well, we're going to go to this meeting. And he was talking, and I wasn't listening much. I, you know, figured I'd let this guy talk. And he goes, I don't think you're ready for the hospital yet. And I'm thinking, no, I'm all right. I don't need a hospital. What he was talking about, there was a noon meeting at the hospital. Because remember, I work swing shift, so this is like noon, right? And so he took me to Pine Recovery. They had noon meeting. Okay? He said, I'm going to take you to Pine. And I said, okay, whatever Pine is. And I didn't know what was proper. I smoked cigarettes at the time, and I didn't take any with me. And we went in and sat in there in the big doorway by that room in Pine. And Ken kept giving me cigarettes. You could smoke in Pine in those days. This is 86, okay? And all I remember about that meeting, I don't remember anything about that meeting except for this guy with a really, really loud voice kept saying, God will do this for you, and God has done that for you, and God this, and God that. And that guy, some of you might know, they call him Ole here. You know, I didn't know at the time who it was, but it was Ole. It was Olindo. Okay? I love that man. I absolutely love him to death. He's been so important in my sobriety. Okay, so I'm sitting here, and that's all I can remember. And so this is going on in my head. I'm thinking, okay, this plan's not going to work. I can't do this. So I'm going to tell this guy, I'm just going to go over to the library, and I'm going to call somebody to come get me. I'm going to tell him I got something to do. You know, and we're walking out of that. To me, it was a big, long hallway out to the front door, out pine. And I said my first prayer in Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, God, what have I gotten myself into? You know, and it's funny because my God that I choose, my higher power that I choose to call God, immediately answered that prayer. I didn't even realize I'd said a prayer, but he immediately answered that prayer because Ken put his hand on my shoulder and said, I want to take you down to a place and introduce you to some people. And he took me down to the Alana Club, which was down on Santa Fe at the time. They just moved to Santa Fe. Right? And he introduced me. There was about four people in there. You know, I told him, okay. You know, I figured I'd go along with it. I figured, okay. And he introduced me to some people. And all these people... Now, mind you, I was to the point where I shaved in the shower because I didn't like at all. Not only did I hate everybody, all you guys. It didn't matter, you know... It didn't matter whether I knew you or not. I hated you. I hated that guy that was in the mirror, too. And I would not shave in the mirror. All right? And I didn't even like looking at him. And these people smiled at me, and they shook my hand, and they said, keep coming back, and how are you? And stuff. I'm like, whoa. You know? And this little old lady is about this tall. We were talking, and she said something. I said something to her, and she said, that's okay, honey. We understand. And she took this thing out of her purse, and it was a little card that had the steps and the traditions and stuff. It was all handmade. She gave it to me. She said, you keep coming back. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I was hooked that day. Little Alice hooked me, and I didn't even realize it. You know, it was that whole thing. Anybody who's new, I want to say welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was welcomed when I was new. And I wasn't welcome in my own skin. I wasn't welcome enough in my own skin to even look in the mirror to shave. I had to shave in the shower when I got sober. That's what I thought about me. And I was hooked, so I, okay, well, I'll keep coming to this thing. And I want to share, those of you that got chips tonight, one of the things I figured, I was still going to listen and keep my mouth shut and figure out stuff. Ken would take me to different meetings, but I used to go to that noon meeting a lot down at the Alana Club. And I noticed that people that got chips usually got called on. And I didn't want to get called on because this is what I thought. This is how well I was when I got sober up here. When I got sober, I thought if what was going on in my head up here came out of my mouth, if somebody called on me in a meeting, and what was going on up here came out of my mouth, they would ask me to leave and not come back. I honestly believe that. And I never got a 30-day chip, and I never got a 60-day chip. Finally, I woke up enough to, by 90 days, I said, oh, they're not going to get rid of me. You know, they even let people like Average Dave talk in here. You know, and I say that jokingly. Dave was a roommate of mine in the 70s, and I love him to death. You know, and he got sober 5 days after I did. And I always remind him of that because I used to always, when we worked shift work, I'd always get off a half hour earlier than him, so I was always a half hour loaded, more loaded than he was. And I got just a couple days on him, and it's a joke that we have amongst ourselves, and it's a wonderful sober thing. You know, it's a wonderful sober thing. You know, so these people had me hooked, okay? And when I really decided this was what I wanted, you know, I figured it out. Oh, by the way, I didn't get to finish that story about the 30-60-day chip. I used to share this all the time in meetings, and I never got a 30- or 60-day chip. And a few years later, I was sponsoring a young man, and he gave me his 30- and 60-day chip, said, here. You know, I want you to have this. And it was wonderful. You know, it's wonderful. It's nice, those of you remember, too, if you get a chance to pass your chips on to other people. You know, that's what it's all about. One of the things I want to share before I forget is I went to a convention when I was a couple years sober, my very first convention I ever went to. I went with Dave, Average Dave. And it was over at San Luis Obispo. Over at Cal Poly, and it was fun. I loved And one of the things that I will never forget, and I always keep here, and I always try and share it when I can, is the theme. You know, all conventions have a theme, and there's probably been 100 conventions that Carolyn and I taped that had themes, and I don't remember any of them, but I remember this one because its theme was, I can't, we can. And that's what this is all about. That's what this fellowship is all about. I can't. I can't stay sober. And I'm talking about sober. I mean being mentally right in my own mind, being comfortable in my own skin like I am today. But we can. I can do it with your help. My God, that I understand as God, does not talk to me. I've never seen a burning bush, and I've never heard when I'm driving in my car or whatever, the voice or any of that kind of stuff. My God talks to me through you. You know, and that's what works for me. You know, and that's something that I always want to share, though, is, you know, I can't do it by myself. I never can. I've seen people that tried, but we can. We can do it. Okay, and so one of the things that I also heard, one of the things I heard in meetings was, and these are people that were happy, that were laughing, that were hugging each other and having a great time. They said, I got a sponsor, and I got a sponsor who has obviously worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and lives the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I suggest you do too. Well, for me, I was still a little bent. I knew that I was going to try and scam something. I was really good at scamming stuff, and I knew I was going to scam something, so I figured I needed to get somebody that was going to kick my butt. Okay? And I got this guy that, he said he was a former Hell's Angel. I don't know if there is such a thing. But he rode the Harley, and he had the leathers and stuff. His name was Woody. Right? And he talked the tough talk and stuff, and I said, I need him. I asked him to be my sponsor. And that man said he would, and he walked me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous the first time, and he didn't have to kick my butt, you know, because he had obviously worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, was living it, and he really, really helped me, you know. And I changed sponsors at about 8 months sober. He got busy, and there was this other gentleman I wanted to have a sponsor, and he, I need to share something with you. If you ever hear anything in a meeting, you're listening to somebody share and your stomach goes, starts twisting and stuff and you get uncomfortable, that means you need to really listen to that. At least for me, that's what it means. Because I was coming up on my 1 year birthday and this lady said in a meeting, I hide from myself in my work. That's all I remember her saying. My stomach went, and I went, oh. Because I was still working swing shift. I went to meetings every day, noon meetings every day, and I did woodwork as a hobby. And I went to meetings, did woodwork, did meetings, did woodwork, and then I went to my job. And I just kept myself so busy, I was really honestly hiding from myself. So I grabbed my sponsor, and I worked through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous again before my first birthday. And that really helped me. You know, it really doesn't. Anytime I hear anybody share something in Alcoholics Anonymous in a meeting that makes me uncomfortable, it means, it tells me that I need to be working on that. I really need to be working on that. And the other thing I heard when I was new was people said, and this is a statistic that, you know, statistics or whatever, right? 95% of the people that do service work stay sober. And by this time, we're talking, you know, 6 months sobriety, I finally could hear things and stuff, you know. And so I thought, well, I should do that. I should do that. And there was this gentleman that used to be around here, Larry Sloan. He got me, he hooked me. He asked me if I wanted to go to a H&I meeting at Pine. I said, sure. I got busy and didn't go. And he asked me the next week, you want to go, make sure you show up. And I said, okay. I thought it was a business meeting. I thought I could do envelopes or something, you know. I'd be mailing stuff or something, you know, service work. Helping out, right? So they talked about, you know, making coffee and ashtrays and stuff. Meeting. Okay. I got down there to Pine, and there was people sitting around, and Larry was there, and there was a guy sitting next to me. And Larry starts talking, and he says, and our speaker today is Mike. And after my jaw got up off of the table, I shared the best I could, and the other gentleman did too. But it got me hooked, and I carried that meeting in the pine for a couple of years. You know, after Larry gave it to me, and I carried that meeting in the pine. Once a week, speaker meeting, H&I, and I went on to do a lot of service work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved doing H&I work. You know what? I was always so sneaky and so lucky, I never did go to jail. I should have had to hundreds of times, but I didn't in my drinking and using days. But I've spent so many hours in so many different prisons around here, and the Tulare County Jail and the road camp and stuff, you know. And it's just been a wonderful experience. It was a wonderful experience doing H&I work, getting out of myself, right, sharing of myself. I'm not a good 12-stepper as far as going out and getting people and sharing with them, but I found that doing H&I work, it worked. It really worked. And I did a lot of different things. I was a CSR. I was a GSR. I was an alternate DCM. I did all those things to help get out of myself. And it worked. And it still works. Now, one thing. Probably some of you know, some of you don't. My current ex-wife, Carolyn, is in the program, and we are the best of friends. Actually, listen to this. Only for me in Alcoholics Anonymous can this happen. On my cell phone today while I'm at school, my ex-wife calls me to remind me I'm speaking tonight. Okay? And, I mean, but she is, I knew it was her because, guess what? She's on my cell phone number, you know? And we haven't been married in 18 years, but we're the best of friends, you know? And that only can happen for me. I mean, it would never happen out there. Okay, it never had happened out there. And Carolyn and I got into taping and stuff, and I wanted to share real quick. I worked swing shifts still when I got sober, and it wasn't real easy. There isn't too many people you can call at midnight that's not grumbling, you know, when you want to just talk to somebody. And people gave me cassette tapes, and I listened to cassette tapes, and I loved them. And I got into tapes. I used tape therapy, you know, in the evenings. You know, and then I'd go to sleep and get up, go to meetings and stuff, and I would trade tapes, and I got a little thing and copied tapes and stuff. And I had a job. I was working. I'd give people tapes, you know, and to loan or whatever. And I didn't care if I got them back. But then those people would avoid me when they wouldn't give them back to me. And I have a friend down in Bakersfield from H&I who had a little taking business. And I shared that with him. I said, Earl, I have a problem with this. And he said, Mike, if people really want the tapes, just sell them to them. And I didn't feel good about it, but I did. And it turned into a kind of a big deal. Carolyn and I had a tape. They're still around. Some people still have some choices tapes from Visalia. We used to pride ourselves in the tapes that we did. And it was wonderful. I've met so many different wonderful people. We've got to travel throughout the United States, even Baton Rouge. I don't know what Baton Rouge looks like. We flew in at night and out, but we did a great convention there. And tape therapy, it worked for me. And it's wonderful because nowadays you can download an 8-speaker's MP3s, you know, and you can put them on one of these little guys right here and listen to speakers. You know, it's really cool. You know, for me, when there's nobody else around, when there's nothing else you can do, I can always listen to a speaker. You know, and those speakers help me. What I want to share is, mostly anymore, I saw Rick tonight and asked him how the Monday Night Men's meeting was. I've been going to that meeting for years. I haven't been able to go to it this year because of outside service work I'm doing. Okay, in 1996, I started doing some service work outside of Alcoholics Anonymous for the YMCA up at Lake Sequoia, which is a YMCA lake up out of Fresno. And I've been doing it every year. This will be my 15th year. Okay? And the thing is I started teaching. I went back to school in 1995 or so. I got serious about going back to school. I didn't want to be a printer forever. And I went to college, and I worked full-time and went to college at COS. And then they told me, go to a good kids college, you've had enough of this. And I went to Fresno Pacific, and I graduated from Fresno Pacific. And I became a school teacher in 2001. And I teach at a continuation school, which is kids that were just like me when I was in high school. You know, they're just like me. And I did it because I wanted to make a difference. You know, I wanted to make a difference. Alcoholics Anonymous and the stuff that I've done over the years has made me, I don't know, better term, has made me want to do these things. You know, and I started doing this YMCA thing. And I got to tell you, the inventory process can sometimes be the best thing in the world for you, and sometimes it can be, well, it is supposed to be a thing that's supposed to level the ego, because I used to tell people, now, since what I wanted to share is since 2001, I've been going up to Lake Sequoia every summer. As soon as school gets out, I spend the whole summer up there. I come back down when I go back to work. Okay? And I used to tell people, I go up there and do the work. I do maintenance stuff, clean things and do things and stuff, so that the kids up there, 400 kids a week, will have a good experience at the lake, at the YMCA. Okay? And I used to say I do it 85% for the kids and 15% because it's 20 degrees cooler. All right? Because I'll tell you what, I grew up in Visalian stuff, and the older I get, the less I like the heat of the summer. Okay? And my wife likes it when I'm up there because I don't run the air conditioner and complain about the heat. Okay, a few years ago I got honest and said, no, because of the inventory process, I got honest and said, no, people, it's 50-50. You know, yeah, I love doing stuff to help the kids, but I like it that it's nice and cool up there, too. You know, and that's the truth. And I need to find a recovery program to teach me to say no to the YMCA, because 3 years ago they asked me to be a volunteer advisor for a group of kids, high school kids. The youth and government has been going on since 1948. It's a wonderful organization and stuff, and I spend a whole lot of time. That's why I haven't made the men's stag meeting, because we have our meetings on Monday night. But I do this stuff because I want to give of myself. I have been made to want to give of myself. And that's what I do. You know, there's been a lot of different things that I do. I join Kiwanis in Woodlake. I work out in Woodlake. Okay? And we have to do a lot of fundraising for these kids, because Woodlake's the 11th poorest city in California. And these kids just can't put money out for this stuff, and it costs a lot of money. And I asked some people in Kiwanis a couple of years ago, what do I do to get money from you? And the lady said, join Kiwanis. So I did. And they gave me money, but I worked for it. Right? So what I'm sharing is, I do a lot of stuff outside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't make it to enough meetings, although I do regularly make the Friday night meeting, and I'm grateful for that. I get to see Rudy. I get to see Rudy a lot, you know, and it's great. And during the summer, I get to go down to Squaw Valley, because I'm up above. I get to go down to Squaw Valley to a Friday night meeting at the library, a bunch of great people, and it's wonderful. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life that I never could ever could fathom. The guy that used to could not look at himself in the mirror when he shaves. I look at myself all the time in the mirror, and I usually cut myself sometimes because I'm giggling at myself. You know, you goofy looking sucker. My hair was all nice and brown and big, and my mustache was brown and stuff when I got sober. Guess what? My hair got gray and stuff because I got to live. I did not think I was going to live this long. I really, really didn't. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of all of you, what you have done for me, that I'm here today. And I thank all of you, and I thank Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm truly grateful. And please, those of you who are new, please give yourself a chance. Keep coming back. Thanks.